Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces Podcast, episode 214. Thank you for tuning in, guys. And thank you for all the love for last week's little reunion with Kate Nash, which was an absolute joy. I had a bit of a rant in the intro, but I was pleased with the rant. So I'm glad that you guys seem to enjoy it as well. But it was a great episode. I love catching up. There's a car outside my house bibbing. I love catching up with Kate. The week before, Jamie Dimitriou. I've had a lot of people messaging me about Stash Let's Flats, which is a sponsor of the podcast, and he was a guest, or Jamie Dimitriou was a guest on the other week too. It started on Channel 4 recently, and it's blooming cracking. This week's guest, I know last week I said it might be Simon Pegg. That's a couple of weeks away. So next week, hopefully it'll be Dan Skinner / Angelos Epithemiou. Then a week after that, I'll give you Simon Pegg. Then I'm hoping to get a chat with Joe Cole the week after that, the actor, not the footballer. Then I recorded possibly my favourite podcast of all time with Chili Gonzalez, and that's going to kick August off at the moment. So yeah, loads of good stuff to come. But because I promised you Simon Pegg last week, I thought to make up for not having him this week, I'd give you three people, and they're amazing. Two are previous guests and two of the most popular episodes I've done. So we've got Neil Fitzmaurice, the legend of Ravon and Jeff from Peep Show. We've got Dan Kadan, who's a writer and director you'll hear a lot about just shortly. And the legendary Stephen Graham from all your favourite things, including Taboo, Boardwalk Empire, This Is England, so much good stuff. He was great in Safe recently. And also, all of us were involved in a little film called Walk Like a Panther, which comes out, or is out now, in fact, to download. It's out now on digital, so on iTunes and Sky and all them places, Amazon. So yeah, I talked to Dan and said, let's kind of get us together to have a bit of a catch-up. And we did exactly that. We don't only talk about the film. We talk a lot about the film because we're having a catch up. But we also talk about Stevie's got some amazing stories about recently his working with Al Capone and Robert De Niro and Tom Hanks and everyone else. It's amazing. Before we get into it, I should mention that this week's episode is brought to you by SpeechDevelopmentRecords.com. That's my record label. We have got a load of summer stuff. We've got my live Edinburgh Fringe DVD. I recommend that, but I'm really proud of it. So yeah, we've got my Fringe DVD or digital download of that. You could have a weekend of it, right? You could download that and download Walk Like a Panther. I would say warm up with the Fringe DVD, because that's like, it's spoken word, it's got some comedy in there, but it's not like a film. A film needs to be your main event. And then have a main event as Walk Like a Panther. So, you know, a lot of people like to sit down with their family or with their partner or on their own even on Friday or Saturday night and catch a film. So I'm pushing you towards a Walk Like a Panther for that. What else do I need to tell you? Oh, there's two new podcasts launching on the network, hopefully this week. I know definitely on Friday, Off the Beaten Track, Stu Whiffin's new podcast is launching. And I think I'm the first guest. And Off the Beaten Track is a great podcast where Stu kind of takes his guests through, or makes his guests kind of talk through an autobiography of their lives, but through a musical playlist. So they pick particular songs and he's got particular topics for each song. And it's great. I really enjoyed doing it. So that's out on Friday. He's got some amazing guests to come. So check that out. It's part of the Distraction Pieces Network, so support the family. And hopefully tomorrow, and we're kind of touch and go as I'm recording this. It'll either be tomorrow, Thursday, or the Thursday after. Brett Goldstein launches his new podcast on the network, which is Films to be Buried With. And it's fantastic. He asks 7 or 8 particular topics to pick a film. And then you talk through it, and at the end you pick one to be buried with. He explains to you at the start that you've died, the guest has died, and you choose how you died. And then, yeah, you pick a film to be buried with. It's fantastic. The questions are great. There's ones like the first film. You remember the first film that made you cry. But the question that I think is just his genius one, which really gets something that I've not heard on any other podcast, is what film means the most to you because of what was happening at that time, or what happened at that time? So rather than the film itself, it's the everything that was going on around it. And that's, yeah, I got really emotional on my one. It's a bit heavy, but it's me. That's what happens in all my podcasts. So yeah, check that out. Films to Be Buried with Brett Goldstein, both on the Distraction Pieces Network. So the Sting jingle thing that goes at the front of a lot of the podcasts, it's going to get even longer, I'm afraid. I can only apologise. But yeah, they're both amazing podcasts. I'm so proud to get to put them out. So check them out. But for now, let's get on with the podcast with my amazing lineup: Dan Kadan, Neil Fitzmaurice, and Stephen Graham. All recorded. It's the first outdoor podcast I've recorded. All recorded in Stevie's garden, where he's got a lovely kind of blarps swimming pool. He's been looking after the kids all week. And yeah, he's been essentially a youth centre, because they've got a tramp. They've got loads of good stuff. It's nice there. So yeah, enjoy the podcast. I'll be back at the end to chat to you a bit more. See you in a bit. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. You can swear all you like, yeah. It's golden. It's podcasts. So this is the first ever outdoors podcast I've done. I'm joined by Stevie Graham.
Hello.
How you doing?
Oh, hello, Pip.
And Neil Fitzmaurice.
Evening. No, and, afternoon.
And Dan Kadan, how are you?
Very good, sir.
And hello. We're enjoying the sun in your garden, Stevie. Thank you for having us along.
That's all right. Thanks very much for coming. I really appreciate it. Yeah, I couldn't make it to London because I'm Nanny McPhee at the minute.
Yeah.
So you kindly said, well, let's go and do it at your gaff.
I mean, lovely. It's partly because I've seen you sending us all pictures of your kids in the pool, on the trampoline. So I'm looking to speed through the podcast. And then,
I'll tell you what,
then get my swimmers on.
I feel a bit ridiculous having anyone sitting in bright yellow trunks.
Smugglers.
Yeah. I like that you came ready.
And like yes, they are my car keys.
Well, it's like Ibstock's Playboy Mansion, isn't it?
It's a beautiful place, by the way.
Are they sandals with them socks?
Yeah. I love it.
Crocs.
I love it.
stopped off at Runcorn on the way. Get a pair of Crocs.
It's good because we've all come from different directions as well. And yeah. I say this on the podcast a lot, but the podcast is forced hangouts with people that want to hang out but are always too busy to bother putting it together to actually hang out.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what's happened here. I've not seen all three of you together. Well, since we filmed, actually, because Stevie couldn't make the premiere. I should mention that all of us were in a film called Walk Like a Panther.
Oh, yeah. That's
directed, created by Dan, and starring us mugs.
You're still submerged in it.
Yeah, and yeah, it's nice that we get to kind of go, well, it's coming out on digital now. Yes, so that gives us an excuse to meet up and have a bit of a chat and a reminisce.
And have a little catch-up.
Yeah. And a catch-up. So before we get heavily into Panther stories, I'll start with Stevie. You've been kind of busy since we wrapped, haven't you? With Pacino, De Niro, Scorsese, all that crowd.
Yeah.
And you wrapped that and then thought, I'll go and just do a film with Tom Hanks next, maybe. Just let's fill that gap. So how's that all been?
It was great, yeah, Pip. It was fantastic. It was a really lovely experience. That first one with Scorsese... The Irishman. That was you can imagine. You know what I mean? It was a bit weird at first.
By chance, I was in New York when you were there for your first week, weren't you? And it was mad talking to you because you were proper nervous.
Yeah,
you were like, I'm going to go. I've not met you'd met De Niro that day, I think, and you were like,
yeah,
I'm proper nervous. And what I was kind of saying to you was, Scorsese can have anyone he wants. So if you're here, It's because you're meant to be here.
Yeah,
because you're worthy of being here, kind of. You don't have to feel out of place, because...
No.
He doesn't have to have you.
No,
he could have had anyone.
Yeah, and it was one of them lovely
could have had
things.
Me, to be fair.
Yeah, exactly.
I wasn't busy that week.
No. Mate, as I've just said, I was in New York anyway.
Yeah.
He could easily have had me.
No, but seriously, you know, in all seriousness, that kind of... You kind of... It was one of them lovely moments, you know, where you're in your own head sometimes, and you just... Yeah. You're just wrapped up in it, and you think, well, I'm, you know, what am I doing, and well, how's this happened, kind of thing. And obviously, it's a joyous experience. But that was one of them moments where you did pull me out of my own shit. You know what I mean? And say, no, what are you doing? And it was that. It wasn't in an egotistical sense, but you just made me go, oh yeah, you're right, actually,
yeah.
So I do deserve to be here.
I mean, you must have had a moment there, because from an acting point of view, they're your idols, and then you must just think, can I do this in front of them?
Yeah, do you know what, right? I had about 7 shits in me Winnie Bagel in the morning when I had that first scene with Al Pacino. Yeah. But I'd already come up with this little idea in my head when I was at home with Anna about something I was possibly maybe might do. And I didn't tell him. Mm. I didn't tell the director. But I told the cameraman and I told the props fella. And he's sitting and he's eating a bowl of ice cream. And he's all the way through the scene and I'm getting more and more pissed off. And then first couple of takes, we just did it normal. And then on the third take of the wide, I went, yeah, I'm going to do it now. I was feeling more confident and we'd found it. And what it is he's not a stickler for the lines, which is great for me because neither am I. But it's kind of, he was improvising and stuff. So I was trying to kind of find where he was with the script and what we were doing and where we were going.
Yeah.
And I just went, fuck, I'm going to go for it. So I told the cameraman, I told the thingy, and he's finished his ice cream, he's put the bowl down, he's put the spoon in, and I just went, what? And I lashed the metal bowl off the table, and he flew right back, and then and then we cut, and then the next bit I come round, and then he turns and he goes, hey, he frightened me there. Did you see that, Marty? The kid frightened me. I love this kid, he frightened me, really.
That was solid caramel.
We're going to use that. He frightened me. And that was kind of what we went with, and then I just kind of thought, all right, I can play.
See, I've always had a theory that's what divides many actors. In a sense, the reason why you get to, you're there, and Scorsese wants you is because you and it, this might sound daft to people, but if there's a lot of actors listening to this, a lot of actors, 90% of the actors wouldn't have done that.
No,
wouldn't have tried that thought process.
Particularly on the first date. Particularly you do your with lines, Scorsese. You'd be a bit nervous.
I wouldn't have done that. And I think it's really important people listen to this who want to try and do that. It's taking chances. Taking chances is what's got Stevie where he's going. Yeah. Talent as well.
Yeah.
Of course. Let's not deny that. But it's that idea of a lot of people going, I better not come out my comfort zone here. I better stay in my comfort zone, sorry. I better not, because that's Al Pacino.
Yeah.
When he's not, he's already thinking before he's gone away. He's talking to the lovely Hannah, his missus, of course, who's your rock, who's your guy.
Yeah, of course.
He's had that experience. She's an actress as well. So he's had that thing of like, but he's had that thought process of going,
yeah,
I want to try something. I want to
try something different.
And that's
for the character.
For the character, but also as well. Yeah, for the character. That's what it is, for performance, for the character. And I think for people listening, it's very important to take a chance on that.
Yeah.
What I'm interested in there is, who did you tell other than... So you did tell the cameraman.
I told the cameraman because I was like, where's
the
camera? Where's the position?
Yeah. Yeah.
What are we seeing?
Yeah.
And I told the props fella just so we did have more ice cream. And you know what I mean? and then it was lovely and we got on really well. But then there was what I found, and it's similar to what you've just said there, Neil. Well, there was a moment where we were all round the table and Pacino and De Niro was in this day as well, and he's in this scene, and it's only a little scene, and the script was kind of okay, and it moved in a kind of decent way, and we did it a few times, a couple of times, and then I was playing with it a little bit more, and it was this little bit about traffic and about how long it took to get there, you know what I mean? And I'm saying, and he's saying you're 10 minutes late, and I'm saying, well, you know, 10 minutes is all right, no, 15 minutes and all that, and we'd done a couple of takes, and then I just went, it's good, but there's something missing. And then I did, it was kind of, as Steve, and I went, I'm in a scene with Robert De Niro, and I'm not really engaging him or nothing. So we did it again.
I'm showing him what I can do.
Well, no, it was just that I haven't had a moment to, like, you know, thingy. And we're just doing it, and I just thought, right, because and then you think about a character, And me and him are old pals, do you know what I mean? We've been together for years. He kind of fucking works for me as well, so he should do what I say, really.
Yeah, yeah, that's
he should
it.
Be
that's,
on my side yeah, in this yeah. situation, not backing him up. And he's not backing anyone up
and
here.
And that scene will play out. Yeah. If you're inferior to him in your thought process, yeah, exactly. It will play out.
So then I just went around, we were doing it, and we've gone yeah. through it, and we're talking, and he's gone 50, and then I just went, and I went, what do you think, Frank? Obviously in an Italian accent, American yeah. Italian accent. Not as a Scouser. But I went, what do you think, Frank? And he just looked, and I saw him just go, shit, what do I think?
He went, he
and, then, and then he went, and then he, no, and then he went, as the character, but then he went, well, you know, maybe 11 and a half. And it was a fucking hilarious
yeah,
line.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah,
then he,
yeah,
and then I
yeah.
went, but the traffic's bad, isn't it? And he's like, yeah, the traffic is all backed up, yeah, back in yeah. the... And I was like, yeah, okay.
Ooh,
and then I was like, now I'm playing,
lovely.
Okay.
The
this
ring
is lovely. Let's have some tennis. And then I stood up and went to fuck off and move away from the table. And he all went, whoa, whoa, no. Yeah. And then obviously Stephen goes, no, I'm sorry about that. I got a bit carried away. Maybe I shouldn't have got up. Was it okay when I spotted there? Like, what? You made the scene. It was yeah, part of the scene. Beautiful. It come alive.
But that, and that, in essence, is having that ability to go, I'm gonna drive the scene forward, and I'm going to think about things.
And it's realising all the knock-on effect there, because doing that ice cream thing in the first scene and it working gives you the confidence then to know that, oh, I am at the table.
Yeah, we can play.
We
can bring stuff.
I've been dead lucky in Taboo and in Panthers that the first scene I did in Taboo was with Stevie, and we are you... threw out a load of improvisation, which I wouldn't have had the balls to do on my own. But it was me and it was Atticus and French Bill, and Tommy's going to come over and talk to you. I had no dialogue, and we were just waiting. And every time you'd ask a different question about the prostitute I'd slept with last night.
That's right, yeah.
And it just forced that improvisation that I came up with some good stuff. It made the director laugh. It made everyone laugh, and it gave me that confidence to play about. And similarly. On Panthers, the first day of all filming was me, Neil, and Gus.
And that brilliant scene.
That's intimidating for me. I'm still brand new to this. But because Neil is so experienced and a great comedian,
comedy
and Gus
legend.
Is a stand-up, it meant... And Dan, from the get-go, was like, look, we'll do a couple of takes on script, and then we'll mess about a bit.
Yeah.
And it meant that we all had this moment of... ad-libbing, and again, it's the first scene, so everyone's excited anyway, but the fact that we had everyone laughing, from then on, I was like, this is good to go.
That was the very first scene.
Yeah, the very first day. I mean, it set, completely set the standard. The bar was raised from day one.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was brilliant, and everybody felt comfortable. And, you know, you're performing in Leeds Varieties, which is where Laurel and Hardy have performed back, you know what I mean, back in the day. So
completely.
It's a beautiful, beautiful scene. And to be honest, you and Guz working with Neil was it was a joy. I mean, and the characters, you know, because originally that was one character that we made into two.
Yeah, whose
just
idea
because
was
I
that then?
Probably, was it yours?
I think so, yeah. Didn't I say Pip would be great?
Hang on a minute.
But you
and your ideas, what would you have done if Al Pacino had a Calipo in his hand, or a Calipo, whatever it was?
Squeezed it.
No, I was just saying, it was, but it was a great thing that he was open-minded to even turn them into two characters.
Exactly, and it couldn't have worked better.
Yeah.
I mean, you two are a comedy double act in that family. I mean, it's brilliant.
So good.
And, you know, you say, which you are a comedy legend.
Yeah, completely.
But working together, that threesome, everybody got excited.
But that only works when there's an open-minded collaboration. That's I've always had this thing, because I've written scripts as well, and I think that I think you should always approach. I always approach it as there are 1,000 interpretations for everything you write, and I think if you shut them all off, because some writers will say, "No, stick to that." I get it all the time. Stick to the words. Well, hang on, mate. I know you've written some really good stuff, but there is so much we can add, and so many different ways you can go down. You can come, with some, but when they block it off, and directors block it off. There's nothing worse than just feeling like you go, I'll say these lines then, because you'll only ever see it this way then.
And again, it's realising as well that, as Dan will know and you'll know as a writer, there's some lines that you've just put in because there needs to be lines there that you're not precious over. So if someone can then improve them, because you can't think, it's not a Kevin Smith film or whatever, where every bit of, it's all about this everyone's got a witty comeback and all this kind of thing. In more realistic conversations and dramas, you've not... got that. So if you've got that freedom to play about a bit,
it's the purest form of acting as well, because
someone can pull you back and say, no, that one's important there, but go off the rails there, and things like that.
You just need a guide, do you know what I mean? Because the reason that you guys are doing the job that you're doing, right, is because you can perform.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you can be these characters. You are these characters. And so trying to stifle any creativity that comes... Because, I mean, film, for me, it's possibly the purest form of collaboration.
Yeah.
I really think it is. From running down to, you know, being the producer, the exec, whatever it is. You know, we all play a part in this.
Yeah.
And you just, as a director, all you're doing is making sure that the people that you know are amazingly talented and brilliant at their jobs, both in front and behind the camera, are doing that.
Yeah.
That's it. And you just try to prize the best out of them constantly.
And it's more like an orchestrator. Yeah, isn't
exactly.
It? You know what I mean?
Exactly. Because I know... You know, like Stevie and I have been mates since Snatch, right?
Yeah,
1999 we met when we were making that.
It's mad.
And exactly. And, but we've never... I mean, I'm sure we've had some very bad ideas off camera, but, you know... But on
terrible.
With regards to work, I don't think we ever had a bad idea.
No.
You know, we've collaborated a few times, and it's always
and
been great.
Sometimes I might say something, you'll go, that's shite, and I go, yeah.
Schindler's List on Ice, come on.
Hey, hang on a minute.
It all work, I tells you.
That sounds great. Can you get Ben Kingsley on the phone so he can escape?
So how is it to go from... Because, again, Walk Like a Panther was... a project that Stevie and Dan had been working on for years. So to go from that, and you weren't at the premiere, but you sent a video from the lovely Tom Hanks and you,
yeah, that was
which was amazing for all of us in there. Yeah. And I sat next to Hannah, and she had no
she
idea. Her excitement. Everyone's like,
it's really sweet.
I didn't know this was happening. So yeah, explain that.
What
bit. To go from a film that you and your mate has been trying to make for years, and then you've made with a load of your other mates, doing a film with Pacino and then Tom Hanks, they're very different, but they're all living your dream. They're just different variations of the dream.
Yeah, right? Right. Completely. And I don't mean to sound, but if I'm honest, the one I'm the proudest of is Walk Like a Panther, because that's a concept that, you know, Dan came up with over 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And being involved with something for that long and watching that come into fruition was amazing. And it was that kind of... It was really weird. You know, obviously, there was a casting director involved, of course, yeah. And they do a great job, and they bring some people in. But it was kind of... We got to cast it ourselves what I mean?
Yeah, a lot of the roles,
like obviously us, lot. You know what I mean? We got to cast that ourselves. I
must tell you a story
together.
Over that. It was quite funny because it was a series of my journey with Walk Like a Panther started with me weirdly completely out of the blue, driving in town. I was having a meeting with a mate of mine, and then I just said, I wonder how. You have to cut this bit because I'm trying to think of his name. Michael Socker. Nuts. So I'm saying, I wonder how Michael is, because I just played
cut this bit
because I can't remember his name. I'll cut you. I wonder how Michael Socker is. I just played his dad in something.
It'll be
in
my
before.
Voice.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. I wonder how Michael Socker is.
Try and get Stephen Hawking on. Michael Socker. I'd just done a job with him a year before playing his dad, and I hadn't, and it was just very weirdly I phoned him up right up the blue. I went, Mike, how are you? And he went, all right, my duck. And I said, well, right, he said, I've just come out of a meeting for this film. And I went, what film? And he went, Walk Like a Panther. And I said, who's casting it? And he went, Dan Hubbard. And I said, I got him 2 tickets to the Man United game, the shit bag. Why isn't he giving me a call? So then I phoned, and then but I have to tell you a story. My agent got in touch and said, look, or Dan got in touch, or my agent said, look, Dan wants to have a Skype conversation with you. And I went, wicked, all right. Went upstairs, typed in Skype, come up, and I went, fucking hell, it's £40-odd to join it. So you have to put money in the account, Mike. So I joined it, put my credit card details in, and I'm waiting for the call, and it didn't come. Next thing, the phone said, can he call you on FaceTime? And I went, yeah. So FaceTime comes up, and it's Dan. He went, all right, Dan. I went, I was waiting for you on Skype. And he went, yeah, no. He said, well, it's £40-odd to join. Just fucking joined it. But that's how it was, one conversation with him in the front room. It's still owed that. I'll have to just call someone random in Sri Lanka. Just have a little chat to them. Use me. My money's going.
It won't go for 40 quid to Sri Lanka, mate. You'll be on for hours.
And I'll be on for hours,
Any minute, I think.
But it was the one conversation, really, that I had with Dan, which was lovely. And then Stephen texted me going, ah, mate, you know. It was that lovely little thing in this business where you can kind of count on one hand, really, people who are looking out for you.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a bitter way. It's just people have got their own shit to do.
Yeah.
But it was lovely because I'd never met that before. We instantly got on, and I was throwing ideas about Cliff at you straight away. And
Yeah.
And you were like, oh, mate, yeah, that'd be great. And then Stevie's like, oh, I've just heard you've been on with Dan. And it's just a lovely thing.
I've got to say, there's nothing better. Listen, it's my first feature, so I'm not, you know, well, I don't know everything about this. But what, for me, personally, my experience is that when people give you ideas about a character you've created that makes that character better,
yeah.
Why would you not embrace that and go, give me more,
yeah.
give me more. That's the whole point of this. Because there'll be things that don't work. And there'll be things that the director does that don't work, that you don't agree with. And you'll have that conversation.
Yeah.
And you'll duke it out until you get the right outcome.
It's all about the to and fro-ing, isn't it? That's the thing, isn't it?
You'll what?
Duke it out.
Until you get the right... What are you laughing at? What's funny about that? I'll duke out with you in a minute with your ice cream.
Duke it out.
What a twat.
Okay, he's got it's a broken cornetto.
Fucking hell, what is that all about?
And you duke it out.
Where did you pull that from?
I don't know. I was thinking about the Dukes of Hazzard.
What's that? That's like some... hello, it's me, Daniel, from 1920.
Can you cut this bit out? Michael Socker.
And you'll duke Michael Socker. Michael,
say it, Pip, say it.
Michael Socker.
There we go. We're all right. Duke's gone.
But are you completely right? Because it's the... It's the playing about and seeing what works on the day. And because me and Gaz were chatting in the lead up, because we were doing a load of radio, and me and Gaz were on the way to our first bit of radio, and Gaz was like, bruv, have they CGI'd us in extra scenes or something? Because we're doing a lot of press and we ain't in this film at all, are we? But it's because so many of the scenes that we've done were improvised that we'd kind of forgotten. But because you stick to the ones in the script, you're like, I've learnt that.
Yeah.
And then as we were watching it at the premiere, we're like, oh shit! I forgot about this bit. And we're in it a lot more than we realised.
I mean, the scene wafting. That was a
great
one.
I mean, we should reveal the magic there. The reason that Gus has got a towel over his head in that scene is because his hair was completely different. And you both had completely different hair. I had hair pieces clipped in. I spent an hour getting hair put in, and then these two turned up and went, oh, we'll just put towels over your head. I was like, why can I have had a towel over my ears? I'm well uncomfortable with these pins towels, and clips.
Three towels, it's a three towel rule. You end up duking it out.
Classic two towel rule.
Sending the wrong message out to you. It wasn't that kind of film. But it's that after, isn't it? It's the famous story about the scene in Jaws where Dreyfus pulls the tooth out of the boat and the head comes out. That was shot in the editor's pool.
Right, wow.
Because it wasn't in the film, and Spielberg watched and nearly. Back and he went, there's a jump moment not in this film, it's missing. There's a moment of pure, unadulterated shock that I haven't captured. And they went, there was an old woman who edited this, she was a famous old editor in Hollywood, in her pool, put a few lights down there and shot the boat with the head coming out, and it became one of the iconic scenes of the film. Yeah. So then, that's the beauty of going back to it and going, we've just got to nail
something.
It
seems kind of a little selfish or anything else, but how beautiful a feeling is it to get a phone call a few months later to say, we need an extra scene and we want you to be in that scene. Because again, like, if it isn't a film that's got the strict, or if you're not the strict lead in it, because if it's the lead, then they have to be in it for it. But it was amazing to get that email and go, we want more of you guys in it. It's like,
I mean,
me?
What?
Us?
When you've got, I mean, your average film apparently has about 20 speaking roles, doesn't it? And we had 60 in this. 200 extras and 60 speaking actors, it's mad, pretty much. Which is insane.
Yeah. It's a big cast.
It was huge, wasn't it? And it needed to be, didn't it?
But in that sense, you know, because some of them big films with big casts, it's kind of not everyone. I mean, you know, people are all very different and stuff like that. But there doesn't seem to be that kind of camaraderie. Do you know what I mean? There's like little camps of people here and little camps of people there. But on this,
it was,
and I don't want it to sound like a cliche, and I'm not just bullshitting at all. I fucking loved going to work.
It was the most fun. Everyone was just
so much fun.
And it was a weird one for me and Gaz in many ways, because we were the first scene, but then we weren't in for a month.
Yeah.
So we came in when no one knew each other, and we came back and there was a family.
Yeah,
but
it really was.
Again, it was that kind of is welcoming still that everyone was just, it wasn't that all. At first, we were a bit like, we felt like the new kids at school, even though, like, we started this school. We did the first class in this school. But again, as soon as you got in there, and it's beautiful for me because seeing how many people I knew that were involved, because of people I'd just had on the podcast, there was Soccer, there was Stevie, there was Rob Parker, there was Dave Johns, there was all of these that I'm like, it's the best gig ever. I'm going to feel so comfortable because I know half the people. But yeah. all the people I didn't know, Robbie G, Jill was an absolute delight. And just everyone was just, was such a nice, nice little family. And it did, weirdly, because the film is written about a little, a group of tight-knit friends, that helped. But also it's written about, there's the older ones, and yeah. there's the middle, and there's the younger. Mm-hmm. So
we had
the group
that as well,
had
didn't
that
we?
Dynamic. That dynamics, me and yeah. Gaz felt like kids in there, and soccer, and all
yeah.
of that lot.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
then there was the Panthers, who were like the... And then there was the old ones who were kind of getting people to tea when... And every now and then, things like in... Offset. Yeah. So it's
Lindsay
like Coulson, kind of
Lindsay
year.
Coulson, Sue Johnson, do you know what I mean?
And I think it's amazing, you know, I can watch TV programmes, particularly soaps, and I can tell you who the clicks are.
Yeah.
I can watch the cast doing a scene and I'll tell you who the clicks are.
Right.
If you go on that set, I know exactly who the clicks are.
Who sits with
You'll just know who's
who's
the
who's
and in
who.
Exactly the same way when you watch Panther. You know that you know the camaraderie is there.
Mm-hmm.
You, I just well, feel it. It just I mean, it soaks out the screen for me.
It's a reflection of it that when we're at the premiere, I'm sitting there with my missus, and I kept forgetting that I was in it. Mm. I was getting because Rob Parker is someone that we'd met on Taboo,
and we absolutely
adore him. But he's even newer than me to acting, and he had a bigger role, a decent sized role in this.
He was brilliant, wasn't he?
He smashed it. Yeah, the pride I had every time Rob was on screen and
on,
not
yeah.
looking uncomfortable, not looking out of sorts, just smashing it. That it then meant I'd come on and go, oh shit, I'm in this as well. I was sitting there excited for
you
my mate and
for
the
pal,
family
yeah.
and the team.
Yeah.
And then it'd be like, oh man, I'm in it as well, aren't I?
I forgot I'm in this, yeah.
But there's like two points on the camaraderie. One is some of you, obviously we made a short version back like 2000, I can't even remember.
Six,
it's about 11. It was about 7 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, so there's yourself, Ad Fogarty, Jill, Steve Marcus. You know, so there are people that have been together on this and thought about these characters and live with these characters.
Steve First,
of course,
who's phenomenal.
He was, and Hannah,
one of the best,
Hannah,
my favourite
yeah,
people
brilliant.
To meet, and just Steve First and Chris Fairbank were two that I was just like, these are just they can talk for hours. They got the best stories, but
just delightful.
That original team,
but for you guys to keep that, you know, going what you had, because we changed Mark's character quite a lot. But then for everyone else to come along and feel. So welcome, and for the not to be cliched, like you say, but also going to Rob Parker.
Yeah.
I remember Stevie saying, "You've got to meet this lad," because Adam Fogarty, who plays Danny Dixon, we're giving him a brother.
Yeah,
and so and Adam's rugby league and boxer. Rob Parker's obviously rugby league and Taboo.
Yeah,
right.
He's
in Taboo. You
he's in Taboo. Yeah. He's never mentioned it.
Yeah, and the one show. And But Steve, it says you should come and meet Rob and see what you think, because I think it'd be great to be Adam's brother. So we've got me, you, and my daughter Cassia.
Yeah, Cassia was with us, yeah.
And Rob went for dinner in Leeds. And immediately you knew. I mean, listen, he's come from a background of, you're part of a team, number one.
Yeah.
Right? He's worked with a lot of teams. And you could tell he was a bit of a lad.
Yeah.
Or a lot of a lad and a fucking laugh. Do you know what I mean? You knew that he would.
You knew he'd fit right in.
A lad in the best way, though. Not intimidating or any of that. Just a really good.
A proper lad, it's different to a southern lad,
a gentleman who really likes to have a good laugh, and you know, he can get a bit silly, but it's never got any animosity behind it. You know what I mean? He's a top man,
and he did. He came on and he stormed, didn't he? He held his own completely.
Well, I think that was also part from down to the fact as well as which is what I was saying to Stephen earlier on about being with De Niro and Pacino. Not in the same bracket, but what I'm saying is for the likes of Rob to come on set and people to do new jobs.
Yeah.
And to play with it and have that
if there weren't any clicks, if there weren't any people just sort of not, it would have been a harder job.
Yeah, it would have been horrible.
I think the fact that Rob and the fact that Pip and people can come in and just go, well, I'm going to smash this because I feel confident enough.
It's exactly the same bracket. It's one of the things I said to you in New York, Stevie, was the way that Stevie and Tom Hardy and all of that embraced me on Taboo is how Pacino... and that are going to embrace you.
Yeah.
It's like it's mad for me because I was going in there going, that's Stephen Graham off This Is England. And we're chatting a bit, but we didn't know each other that well. But I was a fan of Boardwalk Empire and all this. And Tom Hardy's Tom fucking Hardy, he still is. So again, it was that, although I'm excited to be there, there are those nerves, but no one on Taboo, and then he walked like a Panther as well, no one acted like that.
Well, that's
like,
it. I mean,
again, you've got that cast... that's one of the most experienced casts ever. Like, everyone, even the people on the name sheet, I didn't recognise the names of. As soon as I got there, I was like,
oh my God.
Of course.
Yeah.
We did. That's it. Your confidence of the first day of a job, your confidence can either be shattered or it can soar.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, that's down to the people you meet.
And also predominantly the director. I feel, you know what I mean? Because they set the standard of how this is going to be. Look, okay, this is how we treat people. The way he treats people, you know, with respect and with dignity, is how you want to be treated yourself.
And
he's got no airs and graces, you know what I mean? Go and even get his own cups of tea. He moaned once or twice. I don't know. I'm not letting chilling up. That's a different story. But, you know, it was that creating that atmosphere for an environment where we can all feel comfortable to create something
completely.
And be a part of it.
And
how much of a family, literal family environment.
Yeah.
Not just like mates, as in like you, your wife.
Well, that's what
son,
I was going to say with the watching it. The were any of your kids in it?
Yeah,
in the end?
Cassie's
I know
in it. Yeah. Cassie's in the scene with his daughter Gracie.
Yep.
My mum's in it. She walks out. I tell you what's funny.
Alfie plays me
when I was young. It was his
and
idea.
Hannah's
that.
In it. And
Hannah's
yeah,
in it. How, yeah. Well,
in the such a genuine family affair.
Yeah,
in that
exactly.
Way.
Well, in the short version, Alfie, Steve's son, played the kids, Gloria's kids, with the wig. Right?
Yeah.
Because he was what, 3 back then?
Yeah, probably 3 or 4. Oh, wow.
So then obviously, you know, as the time passes and blah blah.
And we still thought it, and I was like, well, he can't play him anymore. He's too old.
He's too big to go to
prom.
He's 12.
And he's
Steve's in one, but he's still has to.
His son's aged.
That's only of a Tuesday night.
That's it. Your son's aged. Too much, but good for Stevie. His wife hasn't. His wife can still definitely step into the role. Hasn't aged a day. Perfect.
Well, in fact, well she said, played the younger version of Gloria.
Exactly.
She really did.
Oh, the glamorous.
She did.
Yes, she did.
She was proper glam.
She was great.
There's no wonder sweet cheeks turned. but then
it was your idea. That.
So then, yeah, we were like, right, Stevie, let's put Alfie in, but he's going to play young you, and he's just brilliant. Obviously, you know, he doesn't learn from you. As an acting student,
no, of course,
right? He learns from you as his son, right? Mm. But he is so able to act.
He was, wasn't he?
Right?
Yeah.
He's just able to do
it. Apple don't fall far from the tree.
It was weird. Honest to God, Neil. There was a bit. I came to watch them, and he's filming around a ring and that, and he's like, you know, Dan's going, just so I can see you between them two ropes. So I'm watching him, and I'm going, what's he doing? And he's gone to the props, fella. And then he's come back, and I've gone, what's he doing there? And he's leaned on the rope.
A silver bowl full of ice cream.
No, right. He's leaned on the rope and put his arms through. So he's actually framed his head within the shot brilliantly. And then he's just fucking took this lollipop out of his pocket and stuck it in his mouth. And he's just there like that, watching the wrestling.
Telly Savalas was the prop guy.
I thought, you cool little shitbag. Look at that. Look how cool.
But has he been on set and watched you do that? Has he been on set and maybe noticed? Kids are sponges.
Now you could
has
possibly,
he noticed that,
possibly,
that that's the way to go? That's the
thing. No, but he would just wander and do it.
That's just the kind of thing he does,
though.
It's instinctive
thing,
isn't it? He's so instinctive.
Yeah, but it was just so much fun, and it was a joy to watch. And you know,
I'm glad we got rid of that fellow who was going around giving kids lollipops as well. I didn't like him at all.
Got any on you? But he's... I forgot what I was going to say.
Michael Socker.
But yeah, I mean, so how was it for you then, Dan? Because obviously it's a project that means the world to you anyway, because it's your debut, you've been working on it for years and years. Mm. But then also having your mates in, but then also having your actual family in as well. It must have just ramped all of it up more and more, right?
Absolutely. Well, to be honest, it made me feel a lot less pressure than you might feel on your first job. You know, it felt like the most natural thing in the world to make this film. It really did. It was like there wasn't, you know, you do have stresses and pressures and stuff, but it's all easily handled, to be honest, especially on this, because of you lot and because of the crew, because the crew were a brilliant crew.
I suppose
it's
the realisation of a dream as well, isn't
it? It's the realisation of a dream, but also I think that maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, I wasn't ready.
Yeah.
I thought I was for about 10 years before that.
Mate,
tearing it up and acting like a twat, and then but now you go, actually, do you know what? I'm ready for this, and you feel calm, you feel collected, you feel, you know, it just feels natural.
It's the most powerful realization. I've mentioned it a few times on the podcast, but I auditioned a year ago for a Neil Gaiman thing, Good Omens, and I didn't get it, but I've met Neil once or twice, and he came back to me with some direct feedback. It was like, we loved it, but there's someone else in mind, blah blah blah. Listen, this, and it was just great because I could kind of say, I'd managed to get that outlook, and possibly from hearing you talk about that kind of thing on set, was I was like, this is great because, number one, I mean, it's a Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett book, so it's going to be amazing. Yeah. So there's going to be a second series. And my instant thought on hearing I hadn't got it was, imagine how much better I'm going to be by the time the next series is casting.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I'm not ready yet. I'm not ready yet. I'm going to be, when that comes around in a year, I'm going to be so much better.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting point of view from someone starting out in that particular field.
Yeah.
When you've been doing it as long as I have, the negative can take hold and you can go, I'm done.
Yeah.
I can't do this anymore.
Sure,
that's the problem.
Yeah,
it's managing. Yeah. I've always said from an acting point of view, there are two things you really need to be able to do properly. You need to be able to handle yourself the same way you would if you're getting loads of work. And you need to be able to handle yourself if you're not getting any work. And if you can manage the two together, like Stevie's now a Hollywood actor.
Yeah,
but you're no different a person to speak to than you were before all this happened.
Yeah.
But I know people who have done after stuff he's done and are arseholes. So they haven't dealt with the feast, but also dealing with the famine's art.
I was going to say, it's a fine line, isn't it? Because if you're someone who keeps humble on all that, that's the person who's going to suffer the most in those gaps. Because there are gaps, no matter what level you're at. It's one of the things that you said to me on Taboo, because I was like, well, it's my third acting gig. And I was like, they've all been in the last year, and this is my first year. And you instantly said, congratulations, that's great, but that's not how acting is. No. Yeah. Like, get ready for that not to be the case.
Because
it'll go quiet at points. But if you've got an ego, then you'll just be like, well, I'm waiting for this. But if you've kept humble, that's when it's going to pick you apart. I think. Mm-hmm.
It's also having the strength and the patience to know that maybe something's coming around. Yeah. I hope you don't mind me saying this, Steve. The first time me and Steve really connected together, because I'd known of him as well. I always say this. I'm fiercely proud of anyone from Liverpool.
Yeah.
Who, in any field.
Yeah.
Who can get their head above water. And because I left school in the 80s, and I left school when most of my friends were heroin addicts, became heroin addicts. And I remember walking the streets of Anfield when we had nothing. I mean, there was nothing. Thatcher had strangled the life out of Liverpool and surrounding areas and the north in general. And I had nothing, and a lot of my mates I left school with had nothing. I had brothers, though, who kept me on the straight and narrow. Some of them never. So whenever I see someone like Steve or anyone from any sporting field, if it's Stephen Gerrard, if it's Paul Smith, the boxer, if it's Dave Price, I love it because it sends a message out there that you can. If he can do it, you can do it.
Yeah.
And if they can do it, and I love that. And the first time I really connected with Steve on a one-to-one level, because I knew of him but I didn't know, was we both. I don't know whether you remember this, but we both went in for a Ken Loach.
Yeah.
And Ken Loach likes to do a lot of improv and stuff, and then ultimately give the job to a bin man. But I went in and met Steve, and Steve, we connected straight away. Had our little thing together.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, I remember that was really good.
And then that bin man came after us, lucky guy. But it was after you were telling me that you were a couple of months away from giving this game up entirely.
Yeah,
you can explain it.
I think I've talked.
It's important that people know. I think,
you know, and it was, and I mean, it was. I suppose it was after, you could say, was probably in many respects, maybe possibly a breakout role or whatever you want to call it. But it was This Is England. After This Is England, I didn't get a job for 8 months.
Mm.
8 months, and that was after the release of This Is England. I couldn't get a job. And I don't know what that was, you know, I don't know what that was down to.
It's so common, isn't it? It's so common that people will have their big role, and again, it's really important to say this, because I know particularly people like we've talked about, I mean, this is the Rob Parker Appreciation Show, but people who are new to it, that's his first big film, so there's going to be an element where he's thought, as soon as that's out...
Yeah, you're sweet.
We're off
to
the races.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. I've heard that from so many people, that often you'll have that big thing, and it'll kind of rule you out for a little bit, because you'll be... an award winner or this or that, and you'll be seen as out of, oh, they'll be too busy or they'll be out of touch, and it won't come.
Or if you play a role that is so iconic, which you think in many ways is what probably damaged you for a few months.
But I think what happened as well, O'Neill, to be honest, was I think people had kind of forgot that I was an actor, and they thought Shane had found me on the street for a minute. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And forgot that I'd just done a little film called Snatch that I was a little part in. You know what I mean? But it was something that we did a few years before. So I think people just thought, "Oh, where's he from? What's he all about?" Mm. Whereas I've been grafting for years.
Yeah,
but I was that close to, you know, I was going to go for an interview to become a youth worker, because I love, you know, I love working with young people, and
and I'll hopefully giving them a chance and an opportunity and making them see that there's possibilities. But I think with this business, no matter what, you need skin like a rhino, and you need to be extremely patient, and you need to be willing to hold out for as long as you can before you get the opportunities. And then even when them big opportunities come, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's what's going to happen for next. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
It's being the business for the business, not being the business for what comes with it. I can only speak from our point of view. If you love the craft of acting, then you love, because listen, I may not ever find myself on a job as fulfilling and as wonderful as Work Like a Panther ever again.
Of course, yeah.
Ever again?
Yeah.
I mean, God, let's hope with God's grace and God's will that I get more work.
Yeah.
But they're the big jobs. They're the jobs you love. They're the jobs you want to go to work in every day. You could get a job now for Polyakov doing some 5-part BBC One drama. You could hate every day.
Yeah. It's a weird
one. It's just about
one,
enjoying the craft, I mean, enjoying the game, and then the rest comes, isn't it?
This is out of order of me to say now, because this podcast is coming out before the Simon Pegg one, but Simon Pegg nailed it in an episode that comes out in a couple of weeks, and he said it's when you realise it's about the process, not the product.
And
that's the key, because the product is something that you don't have control over.
Control.
It can go good, anything, it can go bad, so much change, but if you're focused on the process, then that's going to be an enjoyable career.
And all in all, do you know what I mean? So all in all, it's people's opinions that, you know, whether they like something or they don't like it. And that's what kind of makes it interesting. Do you know what I mean? We were having a conversation before we started your podcast, just letting the dogs out next door, send forth the hounds. You know, we were saying about big films and how cinema's changed. And right now it's all about blockbusters and big spectacles. Yeah. And this isn't that kind of film. Do you know what I mean?
100%.
It's a sweet little British comedy, which has some lovely moments in it, some real heartfelt moments. But it's very funny, and it's extremely nostalgic, but it's also for a newer audience.
It's beautifully northern as well.
Genuinely,
I loved the fact that the premiere was up north and all that, because it's such a northern film.
Well,
one
of my primary objectives making this thing was to actually make something that doesn't say it's grim up north.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there's Harvey Nichols next to Greg's in Leeds now.
Yeah,
I mean,
But
in all seriousness, it's, you know, I love the grim product that comes out of the north, the drama, it's great. But hang on a minute, you know what I mean? It's not all like that.
That's what was great on that first day was seeing your direction of that, because that venue was so bright and lush.
Exactly.
The costumes were bright. You didn't want us in dark clothes. You want us in bright.
It's more Wes Anderson. I'm not comparing myself to
that. That was exactly
what
I thought on that first day. Yeah,
you know,
more Wes Anderson.
And you pop the colour a lot more, don't you?
Exactly. Yeah, the colours out there. I mean, Steve First dresses like a villain in Miami Vice from 1980.
In the film as well.
But you know what I mean? It was, and the film is all about community, and it's all about family, and it's about acceptance. And it's, you know, if you look at, like Dawn, for example, right?
Yeah.
Who's a African transvestite, right? Played by Robbie G. Brilliant.
Yeah. Brilliantly played by
Robbie G. Nobody bats an eyelid
in
the film. Yeah. And that's on purpose. You don't want to, you know, spend 10 minutes in the film guffawing and pointing him out. Oh, look, there's a bloke dressed like a woman. So what?
And
he's part of that community. He's been there for 20 years. You're the fucking twat.
It's worth mentioning on that and on what Neil was saying about the confidence and humbleness thing. When the IMDb started to go up and the list of people who are in it, you must be on there, right? It's up somewhere, because the two messages I got was from my mate excited that Robbie G's in it and that Ray Vaughan's in it.
Yeah.
And he was like, you got to work with Robbie G and with Ray Vaughan. And I was like, and again, that's a hell of a cast to be plucked out of as exciting highlights.
Robbie
again,
G, the Prince of Peckham from Desmond.
Completely. But that was it. It is so easy to forget what you've achieved and look at what everyone else is achieving and not realise that what you've achieved means the world to all those people.
But also
to us as well.
Just like, you know, tone wise, if you remember like the World of Sport days, right?
Yeah.
You would have to, at 4 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, that's when you had to be with your family to watch that, if you wanted to watch it. No pause, no rewind, very rarely would you record it with your big top loader, right?
So
you had to be, and that's what this film's about. It's like, hang on, sit together, take a minute. Let's look back at the years when you actually didn't have to give a shit, apart from who won and who lost a wrestling match. That's all that mattered in that room.
Yeah.
And you had your own community within a community. And wrestling transcended class. That's also what the film's about.
Yeah.
You know, we've got about 7 or 8 different accents in this little Yorkshire town purposefully.
Yeah,
it's not because
people
couldn't do an accent. It's because that little town is supposed to represent the country.
And also
and
as well...
And people moving in and out from coming from England.
And also as well, isn't it, you know, it's not a crime caper that where they wrestle, you know, £8 billion worth of diamonds from a Russian mob. It's about people getting together to save a pub. It's such a beautiful, heartfelt community type story. And I tell you what really struck me at the screening. Because I was ready for all the comedy stuff, but it was the subplot stuff. It was the stuff that wasn't comedy. It was the relationship between the estranged relationship between a father and a son. It was the stuff that really put a lump in my throat. And I remember thinking, wow, what a kick this is going to be, because people are expecting the Keystone Cops type comedy, which there is in it. There's lots of slapstick in it in that respect.
Yeah.
But what's beautiful about it is that layer of the Dave Johns and Stephen moments and Lindsay, wonderful Lindsay Toulson.
Just that
incredibly well-paced subplot that's there as well that runs alongside. So because then you get to invest in the film more. You're investing in Steve's character. You're investing in Dave Johns. You're investing in the family, and you know what's at stake. And it's not until Stevie's character tells us what's at stake that we go, oh, hang on a minute.
But, you know, on that as well, though, you yourself, I won't say what happens, but you've got three
got
scenes alone, right?
Well.
Yeah. Alone. And in the, and you give us a little bit of information in each one, right? And then at the end, there's a little bit of an outcome, a surprise outcome to you and everyone else. And it's that we don't hammer it on, we don't play it. No. You got a tear in your... I mean, it was... You performed as if you'd been the lead in a drama that had been waiting for this moment for 90 minutes. He's had three scenes to do it, and he's gone, boom.
Yeah.
There they are. And you just get it. I'm getting goosebumps out talking about it, watching you. And then, obviously, something else happens to you. But,
just
snap us out of the emotion.
That brings a tear to both eyes.
But then it's kind of like them black and white comedies I used to watch with me nanny on a Sunday afternoon or something, you know what I mean, after me Sunday dinner, like your Norman Wisdoms and all them Ealing kind of really nice little British comedies, but they also had poignant moments to them. And what's very poignant about this is it's very apt for what's happening today. A lot of pubs are getting closed down in communities in London, in Newcastle, Liverpool, Sheffield, Leeds, all across the country. And it's that kind of, you know, what will happen to the little old fella that goes there twice a week for his Sunday, for his dinner on a Tuesday night at, say, 5 o'clock, for his little pint and to watch a bit of telly? He's not going to have that place to go anymore. So he's going to become more isolated. Yeah. He's going to become more lonely.
And again,
you know, and it's what impact does that have on us as a society?
The people who are controlling that, he isn't a he. He is a number on a thing. Yeah. Oh, they've only got four people in there on the regular. Let's get rid of it. It's not worth it. Yeah. It's like, who are those four people? How important is that? Who wants to run it? Who wants to get rid of it? And
well, you've also got that. You've also got that with Steve's character running alongside the fact that there's also something missing from his life.
Yeah.
There's something that he needs to fulfil for himself.
Yeah, completely.
As well as what he's doing for the community and what he's doing for the pub and the old man who sits in the corner. There's something that he needs, desperately needs, and he needs acceptance, and he needs to feel like he was part of something that was his entire life.
Yeah.
So there are so many layers to it.
We don't really delve into it, but he kind of carries shame, right? Because he's in the most ridiculous way, because, you know, he was due to wrestle as a kid with his dad as a tag team, and it was done, his bout was due to be on TV like 2 weeks before it was pulled.
Yeah.
So he, you know, in his world, which we don't even go into, but you just know from his performance, he's carried the demise of British wrestling on his shoulders almost, because he's got so much shit.
Yeah.
That's why they haven't done it, you know, and it's...
I want to join the heroes.
Yeah. And, and there's that too.
I love it.
That too.
Yeah.
But so a wrestling kind of seems to be a really good tool for that kind of thing, for telling those stories, for escaping. And it's weird at the moment, there's Glow on Netflix, which is fantastic, and it's looking at kind of 70s wrestling in America. There's a Wrestling With My Family comes out soon, which Elena's in, and there's Panthers. And you, us three, Dan, Stevie, and me, we went along to see the WWE UK event recently. And again, it's amazing. It's so different from what it used to be, but it still delivers that thing of they're telling stories and they're giving you stories that aren't what we're seeing on the news that's miserable and, yes, and depression. Even if they've got 8 minutes to tell a story, I mean, in that ring.
Without using the word, I don't mean it to sound this, but it's a sort of a working class panto in that respect.
Yeah.
In a sense that you have your designated baddies, you have your goodies, you have the ones you root for, you have the ones you boo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's that wonderful kind of raw entertainment that people used to love.
You look at that Andre the Giant documentary that HBO put out. It's absolutely beautiful.
Amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
You know, it's heartbreaking.
It's very sad,
Completely. But it's, you know, it's far more about than because, to be honest, this is the thing with what I found with wrestling. When I was a kid, I was obsessed with it. I loved it. I know you're still a huge fan.
Yeah.
To be honest, after Tuesday night when we were at the NXT, I am. First off, because...
It's not what people expect, is it?
No,
it's
quite so not.
Yeah, it's completely different.
I was amazed by the athleticism and the ability of these chaps, number one. But also, what a privilege to actually see wrestling at the Royal Albert Hall.
Royal Albert Hall.
Mick McManus used to wrestle. I think I get pissed with Princess Margaret.
And it meant the world to all of them as well. Afterwards, talking to Trent Seven, who's a mate of mine, him and Tyler Bate, won the belts
Mustache
on the night.
Mustache Mountain.
Yes. The excitement of playing there, and for Trent, the excitement of meeting Stevie Graham. They had a little photo and bumped into him backstage. He was very excited.
Yeah. He was great. They were fantastic, them two.
It's that key of William Regal, who gave some advice on the filming and stuff like that, and helped a lot, helped out on the production along the way. Yeah.
And Rollerball Rocco.
Regal gave some advice saying that, and it's nailed it, and it's what you get with all the different characters in Panthers as well, that wrestling is a circus, and you need to have a high flyer on doing the trapeze, you need to have a clown, you need to have someone taming a lion, you need to have all these different things. It's not just, look at what we can do. It's the variation. It's telling the different stories and bringing all of that together.
And that's why
it can be such, you'll be feeling and channeling emotions that you don't realise are about stuff going on at home or stuff going on at work.
That's the thing.
They're going, well, here's the angry bit, or here's the high flight, here's the romance story that's going on in this. It's like, it allows you to feel that without having to actually encounter. It's similar with football.
Yeah.
You'll get out of football, you'll get blokes who would never show emotion at home unless it's fucking horrible emotion that are in tears.
Absolutely.
And I've seen that with Millwall over the years, just the emotion of, I remember a playoff final where we were at Wembley and we were against Scunthorpe. The after the first letter, the next four is the key thing for Scunthorpe after that day. But just the emotion of, we were winning and we were getting promoted and then they equalised and they won. To feel those emotions in such quick succession, the joy, the adulation of we're going up,
to the
complete dejection of we're starting again. Next season, we're right back at the bottom. You know, everyone's on zero. We've done so much work, and now we're there.
I can remember that.
To have those emotions just bang and then bang.
I can remember that as a Liverpool fan in reverse, being in Cardiff for the West Ham Liverpool Cup final, and we were getting beaten. Steven Gerrard scored this absolute skill on the bolts from it was just ridiculous. And I can remember we went back to the hotel in Cardiff, and I was drained. I was physically and emotionally drained. I was on the bar and I thought, I can't get off this stool, because I'd gone through so much, I'd burnt up so much adrenaline during the match that I was wiped out. And that's what sport can do, and sports in particular, I think, can do it. And I've got such a newfound respect for wrestling, for the physicality.
Oh god, I mean, I
had one thing with the stuntmen, which is a scene that we do where we have the fight in the pub, which I think is a lovely thing to get them all noticed, and the social media takes it all. I had to lift a guy up, and I lifted the stuntman up, and you had popped a rib. I felt it pop. But in my head, I thought, I can't tell these stuntmen that I've just lifted 25 seconds after shaking his hand, I've lifted someone up and popped a rib. So I did that man thing of, I'll be fine,
it's alright.
And I couldn't breathe. It was only that he'd done your ankle made me feel
better.
You injured yourself
straight away. I didn't even fucking stretch or warm up or nothing. It was like, right, here's what you're doing. And I went, okay. Then they went, do you want to go? And I went, go on, I'll have a little bum 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 bum. Right, yeah, got a bum bum. Fuck off. Wallop, my ankle just went bum. I was
nightmare.
And that was it. I was hobbling around for like 3 or 4 weeks.
Meanwhile, Dave Johns, 62, is throwing Michael soccer over his shoulder in the pub. It's amazing. Yeah. Dave's like, bloody hell, I look like Tom fucking Cruise now.
everyone
from,
jumped at that
from
as well.
Zimbabwe. He dukes it out. He's a constant duker.
But that was a valid and interesting part of it, because not with the greatest respect, yep. the story isn't of young men.
No.
And no. there is a physical element, and there is wrestling and training. And me and Gaz kept going on about how Jill was just... smashing people about, just mind-blowing athleticism and everything. And just to learn that. In that, again, it's just, it was a short shoot for many films, so there's a limited amount of time, but a lot of stunt work to learn for people who, again, aren't necessarily in their athletic prime. I'm trying to word this as nicely as I can.
And Rob Parkin and Adam Fogarty were just extraordinary.
They were like two wrestlers, weren't they?
Every time Fogarty at the guys started
raining, weren't they?
Started raining in Leeds.
And Chris Fairbanks, man, let's take that. Fucking hell, do you know what I mean? Yeah. What a incredible. Big thing he went through there.
And he's wearing that furry thing and a leather mask.
Yeah, them boots and all that. And he was brilliant. He's like
an unmade bed, but what a great actor. But in the best possible way.
And again, a great talker as well. I ended up having him on the podcast for, I think we did a two-parter, but that was because the first time I sat down with him.
That boy can tell stories and they're incredible, every one of them.
Yeah.
Incredible. He's such a gentleman.
Just go for hours. And always, so again, it was going to be a two-parter anyway. The first part was purely his childhood. Wow. I was like, obviously he's been in Alien,
Part 3, 7 to 10.
Exactly.
It's like, incredible.
That's what this was like. Alien, Batman he was in, wasn't
he? In Batman, and everything.
I mean, he's done some.
The Fifth Element.
Avengers: Endgame.
Guardians of the Gallery. The Galaxy.
Guardians of the Gallery.
Yeah.
I think Gallery was Tony Hawk.
I don't know, yeah.
Guardians of Kate Garraway.
Look after all the sending
pictures. Guardians of Kate Garraway. That was one of my favourites.
It's getting a bit
Anyway, I'll draw it back in. We're at the hour mark. And so we'll start to wrap things up. But so, obviously, we all get to do it, then wrap and go off and do other things. Yeah. Oh, before we go on to that, I do want to talk briefly, because just before we wrap, they started to screen A Little Boy Blue.
Yeah.
Which both of you guys were in, and it was amazing. And I'd spoken to you before you went off to film it, Steve, and I spoke to you afterwards about some of it. And it meant the world... to be involved in because of where you're from, because of what the story is.
It was one of them jobs that, from my point of view, I phoned my agent and said, look, anything. I mean, I met Paul and stuff, but I met him for the dad, but I knew I wasn't going to get the dad, even though I could have delivered the dad. I knew I wasn't going to get the dad, so that's fair enough. I've spent my career kind of going, yeah, whatever. So I came away from that and said to my agent, Nate, not going to work for that. But then I said, look, anything really. Because my brother lives about three streets away from it. It was something that affects us all. And
can I just say though, this is the kind of, I mean, not to sound pretentious or fucking anything like that, because I'm definitely not, I'm a kid from a block of flats, I can never be pretentious. But Stanislavski puts it finely when he says, you know, there's no such thing as small roles, only small actors.
Yeah.
And on that point, I'd just like to say, Neil came in on one day and he was Liverpool Cathedral, wasn't it?
It was absolutely
packed. You know, there was hundreds of extras there, and it was the funeral service, and Neil's character had to read out a poem which his dad had written, but his dad couldn't read out, and it was verbatim. It was the actual poem, so you can imagine the kind of pressure that you must have on your shoulders to do that, and he just delivered it beautifully. But you could tell it wasn't a man who was doing acting. You could tell it with having his own children. And I'd said to you straight away.
No, appreciate it.
It was beautiful. It was, you know, look, fucking all the years have gone.
But it's an interesting thing to
say. The pressure of it as well, because we talked about it. I can't remember if it was on the podcast or not, but they did a lot of it with the crowd there, and then when they flip it round, you've still got to give that performance.
Well, that's the acting thing, and that's an interesting point to make, because I think it's about... I knew Steve was there, I knew the cats were there, and I knew because I've been in the game a long time, but when I got into the cathedral, the cameras were pointing at them, wasn't pointing at me. Because I knew that they were going to shoot all this stuff out, because they've got much more filming to do, they want to get the thing.
Of course.
So it's about, my aim then was to try and deliver as bang on every single time as I possibly could. Now, I'd asked for Brian, who played the dad, to write it in his own handwriting. I just said, look, will you write this poem out?
Yeah.
And I don't want to read it till a day. I don't want to read it. I don't want to know. So actually, when I read it out, I'm just reading it. So I'm thinking line by line, it's going to hit me, and it's going to hit me, and it's going to hit me. Because, you know, there was probably 7 or 8 or 9 takes of that that I had to do the same thing.
Yeah.
And but I know that the first 4 or 5 are for these.
Yeah.
Because I need to give them something to work off.
Yeah.
And I know there are actors out there who go, well, I'll just punch them ones through.
No, yeah.
And then when you turn it on me, then I'll turn it on. Well, that's no way to get out the game, get off the bus.
Completely.
That's not how you play it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not how you do it. Yeah. So you have to, you deliver it every time. And then, of course, the reality of it sinks in. They spin a camera around, everyone goes to lunch. And they go, right, we'll just bang one off for you now. And you go, hey, whatever. But the thing is, it's
about because you have that, because you have that recall of what you've just been doing, you just tapped into it beautifully.
You just, it was, and it was an amazing thing to be a part of. And I did, just to return the compliments, we were on the set the next day in the ring.
Yeah.
And they played the last episode. Yeah. And I said to him, there was a moment at the end of it, and it just shows the power of an actor when they don't need to say anything to completely engage you.
Yeah.
And I said to Stephen, the only time I've seen that power before or since was the end sequence of The Long Good Friday, when Bob Hoskins tells you with a look exactly what is going to happen to him when you've left the cinema.
Yeah.
When you've disengaged with that film, he's getting chopped to pieces and he knows he is.
Yeah.
And there's an incredible moment at the end of Little Boy Blue where Stephen, it goes in a cycle. It's the episode starts with him hearing about the news of the kill and when he's at a barbecue and doesn't really have time to meet his kids.
Yeah.
Makes that decision to take off the apron and go and do this horrible job. The end of it, he's putting the Barbie, putting the thing back on. He's coming back. He's just been shafted by the police, in a sense that, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They bumped him for promotion. He, you know, because he did it his way. And there's an incredible moment where your hair stands on the back of your neck, where you're just following his face through.
It's brutal,
and
isn't
every
it?
Every single emotion, feeling, is portrayed, and that's.
It's what he's just been through, and a little sneaky for any other actors out there. I look at a picture and Grace and Alfie were on that picture for me. That's how I did it. And it's because it's that kind of what he's lost, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
He hasn't lost, but how much he was engaged into finding and convicting them lads because the fact that this was a little boy that was whose life was taken.
I think that's a great point. Any actors listening out there or would be actors, it's about, I've always thought this, right? You can't, whatever, if you're playing someone who has lost a son or daughter, or you're playing a murderer, whatever kind of role you're playing, there are 90% of those roles you won't be able to live the reality and truth of it.
Hopefully not. Yeah, completely.
But what is a good tip from my point of view is find a parallel.
Yeah.
Find something that you can attach an emotion and your person to.
Yeah.
So find a parallel. It might not be someone, if you're playing a murderer, find a route to why he's doing that, he or she is doing that, and then attach it to something that you can personalise. Because ultimately, when you're just about to go on to do that shot, you're on your jack.
Yeah,
you're on your jack. They're all rooting for you. The director wants it.
Yeah.
You're on your jack, and you've got to find that emotion. Yeah. You've got to find that feeling. Then,
that's making it personal to you to pick it out.
Yeah, completely. So it is a thing though, that the actors will go and do their job, and then we leave set and go off and do other gigs or wait for the right thing to come in or whatever it may be. But Dan, we rap.
Yeah.
We have that celebration. You've wrapped your first film, and then you kind of have to realise that your job's just beginning, really. And there's a lot more. So how was that gap between that and then the premiere? And how tight was it all? I was talking to Simon Pegg. I'm giving away everything from the podcast that's out in a couple of weeks, but he was saying on one of the films he did, and I think it was one of the Star Treks, that when they had the premiere, they were in the editing suite that morning, still just doing some colouring. And they ended up doing more for the DVD release, because the guy who does the colouring is a perfectionist. Was like, it wasn't ready, it wasn't finished.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It had to go, but I want it better. So how was that, kind of knowing when it's finished and having a deadline put upon you and stuff like that?
Well, when we finished, we finished July, didn't we, I think? Early July. So about almost a year ago to the day, I'm still on the film.
Yeah, yeah,
I'll still be on the film till next week.
Yeah,
you know, at least.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, it's a lot. It's not more than you think you're going to be doing. Do you know what I mean? You're expected to do it. I mean, listen, there are certain things I did wrong. I did incorrectly, like personally, you know, putting a family first and all that kind of thing. You it's all learning, but it's tough. It's tough if you get it wrong.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there is there's a huge part of me that regrets the way I did that. You know, there's a measure that I didn't take.
Yeah.
So, but we've gone from the shoot, you know, I think maybe I had a week off. 2 weeks off, and then we're into post. You know, we're the edit's being put together while I'm not there. Our editor Mike, who cut Superman, the Christopher Reeve, Richard Donner one. He works on worked with Sam Peckinpah.
Best one,
Sam Peckinpah.
Yeah,
you know, worked with him on Cross of Iron. I think was his first film. You know?
Amazing,
it's amazing, amazing. And then so I've gone from working with all you lot, which has been amazing, this huge family, to then me and Mike
isolated,
and then he's, you know, in a boiling hot editing suite in the middle of Soho, and you're there for, you know, you're there every day.
It's mad, isn't it? How the in those situations the days become extended, and it's that fact that you've got to really keep focused, because you're a month into it and there's going to be points where you're like, I'll just leave it as it is, and you have to remember, no, you've been working on this for 10 years, forget this month that you're now tired of it and it's doing you in. This is 10 years, so you need to have that strictness on yourself to go, no, don't just leave it as it is.
Exactly.
We need to get that right.
Well, you expect your first cut to be long, like 2 hours, 45, something with what we've shot. And it was about 2:20, you know, and I think the film's running at 1:48 now. So, but the hardest part, genuinely the hardest part, is because I love the characters and the performances so much, is working out, you know, the story's there. With the pieces or not with these pieces.
Yeah.
You know, is it too fatty? We've got to take that. It's too fatty there. It's too fatty there. But it's gutting to see it go, of course. And you know you're not going to be doing a director's cut or DVD or anything, because nobody makes them anymore, right? Yeah. But it's the process is so elongated, you know, and then you're into the VFX. We didn't have that many, you know. Yeah. But the exciting part is seeing the story, obviously, coming together properly. You've seen it. You've written it, you've seen it, you've performed it, and now you've seen the pieces, you know, laid out in front of you, and you go, oh my God, that does work, that works, or that doesn't work. More importantly, what doesn't work, because you know when you've shot it what works, for sure.
Yeah.
You're unsure of what won't work.
Yeah,
you know?
Completely.
And there was no fear. I mean, we needed a couple of little extra scenes, that was all that we...
We
just, the ending was a little bit muddled, I think, at first.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's much more fun.
So how was it to then do the premiere, because we didn't have a cast and crew, or most of us hadn't seen it, but Fox
no
had
one
gone.
Seen it, I think.
No.
No one has seen it, but Fox had gone crazy for it. You've got the Fox opening on your film. It's amazing.
I
it's
know.
That you know you've
exactly.
got all of it
the
there.
Fanfare. You're like,
you got the fanfare, and you know you're happy with it. You know that Fox happy with it, you know, but no one that's worked on it has seen it yet, and we're all seeing it together. So is there that mix of excitement and nerves? It must have given you confidence that it
I had,
you know,
huge
it worked.
Confidence because just because I got to know you all so well and I knew that you'd appreciate your own work and each other's work. I knew
we are all very arrogant.
And we're not going to.
Yeah, you are.
You're so arrogant.
You know,
it was like walking into the it's like a Zeppelin ego. Right? I walked in and I'm stuck in. No. You know, I'm talking about artistically and brilliantly and appreciating
and each other's,
one another.
Yeah,
that's what
exactly.
I'm saying. You'd appreciate.
Yeah, completely.
And I knew that. And I knew the musically what we'd put on there was going to work, and everyone would be excited, and the colour and it would pop and. And I've got to tell you, but I didn't think it was going to be as appreciated as it was.
Yeah.
By that crowd.
Yeah.
I was blown away by the response of all afterwards.
The crowd absolutely loved it.
It was amazing.
500 of you in there, massive screen. And like you said, the fanfare at the beginning, that was on Star Wars, Die Hard, Alien. I mean, what's going on?
I mean, the premiere opening up with young Alfie Graham coming out in his wrestling gear.
Alfie come out in character with his got a chant going
and firing everyone up.
Everybody, you know, and then obviously, you know, I'm doing a speech in front of all these people going, my God, I don't know, again, it just felt natural. It was the progression of my story here, my experience. It was going to go from, we've done that, of course I'm going to have to introduce it, and now we're going to, you know. And I'm still working on it because it comes out on Monday. Not meaning to plug there, but, you know, it's on digital download on Monday. And so,
and
I've worked, you know, and everybody's giving time, like we're here today doing it.
Yeah.
Because we love the thing.
Yeah.
We all did.
And even with the drills of maybe the neighbours over there in the back.
Yeah. I know, that's just my mother hates me when I'm on the radio.
No, the neighbours are putting up a big screen because the digital release comes out on Monday. And I want to watch it in class at night.
Oh, okay.
That's what's going on. They know the deal.
Like a drive-in movie.
Exactly.
But I've got the moments that, I'm just trying to get, I'm not being really rude, I've got the moment that the lights went down and the video, and Stevie, come on with Tom Hanks.
That was amazing, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that's
very funny.
I mean, on that, do you remember we'd had a back and forth in the day?
Oh yeah, trying to sort that out was a hard graft, you know.
Before that, weeping because we were so proud of one
another. Because you were shooting on a ship, submarine, kind of in the middle of nowhere.
We had a boat in the studio.
We were going, right, Steve, is there any way we could get this? Would you do something with Tom? And he went, well, I don't know. And I got that. Do you know what I mean? It's like, but he did, and he sent this clip through, and he sent it with about 40 minutes.
I'll put it up to the mic and you can hear it.
Do it. You found it.
About 40 minutes to go before
really
we had to get
tight.
It on the screen.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah,
but you can't just connect an iPhone to a fucking cinema screen, right?
Yeah.
So we had to get it to a lab and this, that and the other and get it made. And we managed to do it with 1 minute before the doors opened.
So wow. Let's give the audio. So the description here is it comes up and Stevie, you're dressed as a sailor in this.
Yeah,
and it starts off with just Stevie on shot.
Let's just see how this goes.
And then there's a reveal. Go on, give that a play into that.
Try that again. The best book laid plans of mice and men. Alright, so I'll put that back.
Here we go.
I'm part of a fantastic tag team called the Flank Brothers. Flank Brothers,
the scream in the cinema.
I mean, that was just synonymous with the piece. Well,
yeah, that was how it all kind of went together.
Let's go to the
real life Woody and Buzz.
I said, would you do us a favour? Would you just say thank you to the? He went, yeah, sure, let's do something. I went, all right, should we improvise a little something? He was like, yeah, come on. And it was like, what should we be? And I was like, I don't know. He was like, what can you?
It's amazing.
And he went, let's be the Smash Brothers. And he went, yeah, let's be the Smash.
What can we be? Stevie's thinking, I don't know, because I thought you were going to tell him to fuck off. We haven't got this far in me.
I'm like, well, he wasn't even supposed to open the door, but you know what I mean? Here we go, then. Yeah, the Flank Brothers, yeah.
And I told no one. I think Lena had told, but nobody else.
Yeah.
And it was quite something. That was it. People were like, what?
Oh, the shock on, as I said, Hannah, Alfie, Gracie, all of them were all sat next to me, just like, I didn't know this was... Like, Hannah literally almost bruised my arm with a little hit of... I didn't know the grab of... I didn't know this was happening. What's this?
It was such a lovely
so
moment.
So good.
It was a real joy of a film to work on.
Yeah.
And And a lot of friendships were formed, and a lot of friendships that have been formed for years before were cemented, you know, through that. Through
and that was the beauty as well of it all coming together, though, because there's always that weirdness of the mates you had at school. Like, you know, when you have a night out and the mates you had at school are going to meet the mates you've got now, and it's always a bit weird. It's like, are they going to get on? I'm slightly different around each of them. Is it going to be awkward and weird? And that felt like this. It was like mates from the snatch days.
Most
to
of the mates
from...
I've got now deal to the most of the mates I had at school, so it's worked out beautifully.
Exactly. So, but again, it just came together, didn't it? Everyone did just fit and hit
well,
it.
Well, I also think as well, because of this digital download now, because what I think is brilliant about it is that it will allow Walk Like a Panther
to have a second life
and to be part of people's houses. I think this is such a beautifully intimate film.
It's a great point
because I think the big screen you can sort of get lost in it a little bit, whereas I think now it's going to come to people's houses like we used to queue up in the 80s to watch it with the family and the beautiful irony.
It's an amazing point because I love the cinema. It saddens me that films are dying off in the cinema, but this is a film that starts with people watching wrestling
on
TV. So if there ever was a film that it's coming home as such, it's this one, right?
Absolutely,
it was a great feed-in for the World Cup.
Thanks, guys. It's football related.
And I just want to finish that point that you brought back into the soccer world there, Pip.
Michael Soccer. No,
Michael Soccer. I saw Diego Maradona, and I went, well, fucking hell, he's got two watches. You're the only fella I've ever seen with two watches, and now I've seen Diego Maradona.
Me
two
and Maradona,
watches.
The two watches.
You know why he wears two watches? Because he's sponsored by two different companies.
Who?
He's sponsored by Tag Heuer and another company, so he has to wear two watches.
Amazing.
Yeah. Oh,
that's not my reason.
No, Pip
I thought they were fancy sweatbands.
No, Pips is Pierre Casio.
Yeah, damn right. Well, it's been an absolute joy to catch up with everyone.
You too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I hope everyone enjoys Walk Like a Panther's new life now on their home TVs.
On televisuals.
On television or on iTunes.
On iTunes. It's going to be on Sky Box Office.
All your basics. All your stuff. Just type in Walk Like a Panther.
Where can everyone keep up with everyone? Because I know Dan's been brought into the 20th century now. He started his YouTube channel and stuff like
yeah, but they've all been taken off. Everything I put on got copyright. I'm like, all these music videos. I keep getting emails from YouTube going, sorry, you've broken copy. I'm like, what do you mean? I made it. Can't I put it up? I'm not nicking it or making money on it.
It's brilliant. So they're taking the stuff down that you made.
I'm like, I had about eight things on. I think I've got two now. I mean, my bar mitzvah's on it, even though I'm not Jewish.
Amazing. But we're all on Twitter and Instagram and all the,
yes,
the social media.
Yes, at Fitzy Fella.
So
join me. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
Fitzy Fella.
And again, it is a film. The beauty of when it came out was getting people tweeting along quotes, tweeting lines, and tweeting their favourite bits. So. Yeah. You know, we've all had that premiere moment, and it's been a while, but it's going to be lovely to hear everyone kind of giving their thoughts on that this time around as well.
And engaging, and also like the WWE were massive. I mean, listen,
they've done a load of posts about it all, haven't they?
They've been incredible because they've got their own films, they've got their own studio, they've got their own stuff. They could have like just turned their back and gone bollocks to you, mate. Do you know what I mean? But it's through the love of wrestling, clearly, and entertainment. They didn't make any money out of us all being there and playing the trailer on the screen.
Yeah.
They wanted to just to be part of it. And I think that's quite honourable and hats off. And it's fucking rare.
I was there for both nights because you guys were there for the second night. And the one tweet I saw on that night was just seen at Scroobius Pipio discreetly smiling proudly as his film trailer plays at the wrestling. Because I was there with my mate and I was just be like,
That's
pretty cool. Just a quiet little.
How did that really first felt great for you?
Or when we were going up north for the premiere of the film, just walking into a Euston station and big, huge on the screen there, and things like
that.
Genuinely, just watching the trailer the first time. This is going to sound stupid, but I didn't expect to be in the trailer.
Right,
I saw it come out, and I was like, "Oh, this will be great to see."
Yeah.
And even more surprising, it was one of the scenes that we'd shot a week or two before as a tag on. Yeah, so it was such a good kind of, at the end of moment. Of
it's
like,
wonderful to take those
and that's one of the comedy beats in the trailer. I was like,
it's amazing comedy beats.
You take those moments, and they're those wonderful self-pride moments where you're...
No, but my question to you is, how did it feel because you were at the wrestling at the Albert Hall
it was amazing. It was amazing. I'm incredibly awkward in public situations anyway, so Jim Smallman, who runs a wrestling company that I've been going to for years, and a lot of those guys have wrestled at one of the events there. I normally stand near the stairs, and my mate, he cracks up at this. He'd gone to get us some drinks. It was in between fights, it was an interval, and they put a playlist on, and one of my songs came on, and my mate, as soon as it came on, he was like, yes, he's going to be dying in awkwardness, because I'm just stood there seemingly up on a stage on my phone, and it came on. And I did not look up from my phone once. Because in my mind, everyone's staring at me going, oh, yeah. You had to play your song, have you? Just about. And I'm like, fuck off.
I was at a thing last week, an event. I sent you the video.
Yes, you sent me a video.
I was at an event last week in Birmingham, and they played one of his tracks, and I was like, get it,
What did you do? We had Rick Astley covered, who's a massive supporter of the film, and he's been brilliant, Rick.
Yeah.
He's been amazing. And he covered the All Seen Eye track, Jarvis Cocker, the Walk Like a Panther.
Yeah.
Brilliantly.
Yeah.
But you sent me a clip through from Anfield.
Yeah, they played it at half time. Yeah.
But did you organise that?
Yeah.
Smart.
Hey.
Yeah. Good shit there.
I was checking.
I got in touch with my assembly, you played it.
I was looking for. What was it? I think it was Grandmaster Flash over in the car the other day. So, you know, the way you get it up on your phone, and then I was looking for Grandmaster Flash. Bosh. And up came Grandmaster Flash, and the one beneath it was Pip.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, free enough. He was like, that's Pip. And he ended up swerving the Grandmaster Flash and banging Pips on. Yeah, it was amazing. I love it when little weird things. I sent you pictures, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. I love it. Again, it's like beautiful that. Stuff like that. Those small things. Because again, what people forget is everyone is still a human.
Yeah.
And it is still nice that when you're proud of something and something good happens.
I had that wonderful moment when I'd done a whole day's work with you, came back to you and forgive me, but I didn't realise what your history was.
Yeah.
And I got back to the hotel and I was sitting talking to Finn, one of the lovely girls who's in the film. And she went, Scroobius Pip. And I went,
I don't know. What's he
doing? And then they put one of your tracks on. And I texted you that night, didn't I? I went, mate, I'm so humbled by your talents. It's ridiculous, you know what
it's
I mean?
It's mad. It's what I mean, again, it's weird that... You know, it's weird to end on this, but it's what I've enjoyed. One of the most things in the kind of acting thing is I'm there to learn, I'm there to start and try and work my way up. So because I'm so focused on that, I forgot that I've got a previous career, and it was similar on Taboo that each day I was coming in and people had found a little bit more. It was nice though that I'd had a good week of just being a polite new boy, just trying to help out, trying to do everything I can. No oh, I've done this before, or it gradually starts to come out. And it is nice because it gives you that confidence when you are feeling out of your depth. You're feeling I don't deserve to be, as you were saying Pacino and all that. The moments I'm feeling that, someone happened to come up and go, just watch one of your videos. And it gives you that little... I've had that at a couple of auditions as well. I'm in a waiting room and someone will just come and go, I just want to say, big fan. I'm like, that's when I need to hear this. Just before I'm about to go in. And it helps to have a bit of an ego and a bit of confidence.
Yeah, yeah. So I often hear just it on the tube that. On the way home after I've ballsed up the interview. Yeah. Big fan of Shut Up.
But it's that kind of thing. I'm bringing it back to end on, I suppose, in a way. And what very much this film was about for all of us and what it is, it's that kind of, it's an industry, all about success and this being the best and that being this. And it's very much, that's what it's based on. That's the drive behind this whole thing for most of them big production companies and all that kind of things, you know what I mean? But it's like what you said, Neil, it's that being proud of something, but also, with... There was no egos on that, at all, not at all.
Egos wouldn't have lasted 2 seconds.
And it's great when that happens. It really is, and it's I feel like there's a lot of people forging that way more across this industry where it's not about an egotistical sense thing. It's about the joy of the craft, what you were saying very eloquently, and it's about people supporting each other and being behind each other. It's fucking hard enough sometimes, just life in general.
And it's not very often you come out of jobs knowing that you've got friends for life.
Completely, 100%.
We don't always get in touch. I get in touch with guys and girls off this set than more than I ever done before.
Yeah.
But we'll always have a connection and we'll always have a that respect. It sounds, cliched and it sounds a bit glib, but it's absolutely from the heart. It was a special, very, very, very special job.
I just people enjoy it. Yeah. People enjoy it 10% as much as what we enjoyed making it. I think we'll do okay.
Right. Well, thank you all very much for your time and this lovely little reunion.
Cheers.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been
cheers,
lovely.
Pip.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Discretion Pieces.
There we go. I hope you enjoyed that. And I hope you enjoyed the kind of nice outside noises that were going on in the background and things like that. I really enjoyed having that chat. As you will have heard, that's three people that I absolutely adore. And we all just rejoiced in being in each other's company. So it was a beautiful catch up. And obviously, I now just urge you to go and give A Walk Like a Panther a watch. It's a beautiful living room, a movie. And also, as I said, two new podcasts on the Distraction Pieces Network for you to grab. I'm going to be having both of these presenters on at some point soon to have a bit of a chat about it all. But Off the Beaten Track with Stuart Whiffin is going to be on Fridays. And Movies to Be Buried with Brett Goldstein is going to be on Thursdays. And you're going to love them both. I strongly urge you to give them a listen. Lovely. I'll be back next week with Dan Skinner and Angelos Epithemiou. Now, that's the same person, but I switch questions between... I switch who I want to talk to at different points. So you get to enjoy that. And then, the week after that will be the amazing return of Simon Pegg. It's a lovely catch-up. You're going to adore it. I will see you all soon. Have a good one. Ta-ta.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.